And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
I am a passenger, and I ride and I ride through the city's backsides. I see the stars come out.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander, the journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets. Our episode-by-episode look at the superlative Star Trek series Deep Space Nine. I'm Paul Spataro, and I am joined today, as always, by my two good buddies, Sean Engel.
Hello, everyone.
And Mr. Andy Leyland.
Hello.
Today we are looking at episode number 9, The Passenger. And I think we'll have some interesting talk about this one, even if we don't have an interesting episode. Oops, did I already say what I was thinking?
Uh-oh. Well, again, keeping with what we had with the episodes Q-Less and Dax, there may be some controversy in how we view these episodes. So this will be interesting to hear how this turns out.
I'm going to go sharpen my blades.
Nice.
But before we get into The Passenger, anybody got any interesting comic book news? Not comic book news, Star Trek news. Again, not back to the bins. Not back to the bins.
Are you confused over which show you're doing?
It's early.
You know, I hate to keep bringing this up, but unfortunately on Facebook recently there was another post. Someone posted more about Boobgate. And I hope this doesn't become a running theme for the show. I didn't really mean to make that big an issue of it. And I should just probably shut up about it now so it goes away. But there,
you should, yeah, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
But there was a post on Facebook where...
photos.
Yes,
see, those were your first problem right there. There was a post on Facebook.
Yes, I should just completely... I should realize that's exactly what I should ignore. Post on Facebook, let those go. But yeah, someone to bring it back, I guess someone did post on Facebook with pictures of Lursa and Bator and their boob windows and essentially saying, yeah, I like this, but I don't want to get any further into that. I think we've killed that.
We've flogged that horse, haven't we? It's not a case of not liking it. It's a case of it not making sense and holding Star Trek to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm. I fully agree. But yeah, I don't have anything really all that much Star Trek to talk about this time.
No, it's been quite quiet, hasn't it? We've not heard anything else about the new film. There's not been any movement on DVD releases. Although the Blu-rays have suddenly come down immensely in price on the original show.
It's probably
not over here. The first season on Blu-ray is currently £15 on Amazon.
Oh, that's
so I don't know what that. Yeah, I don't know what that would translate to in American dollars, but that seems
something around 25.
That seems incredibly reasonable price to me for the Blu-ray.
For the Blu-ray of the original series, that's almost worth picking up. That's definitely worth picking up. One thing that I will mention, it's not really Star Trek related, but it's tangentially related to Deep Space Nine. As of the time of this recording, we found the unfortunate information out that Glenn A. Larson just recently passed away. And the reason I say that is because Glenn A. Larson is, you know, one of the founding fathers of some of the sci-fi shows from the 70s that I know we really enjoyed. You know, he was behind Battlestar Galactica, you know, Buck Rogers, the Magnum P.I., stuff like that. And one of the things is Battlestar Galactica eventually got taken over by one of the writers for Deep Space Nine, Ronald Moore. So, you know, I guess we can kind of tangentially relate Glenn A. Larson into Deep Space Nine here and just basically say our farewells to a person who I think truly influenced the sci-fi genre and, you know, movies or television shows of this type in this era. It's kind of sad that Mr. Larson had to pass away.
He was also involved in Magnum, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I didn't really want to get into that on a Deep Space Nine podcast. He basically came up with the concept of a guy who's leeching off a richer man and living in his house. That was it. Donald Belisario took that idea and fleshed it out into what we know as being Magnum P.I. But yeah,
that's where I was confused. That's where I was confused because on the article I saw it said creator of Magnum, and I was like, oh, I thought Belisario created Magnum. So now you've clarified that.
It was a one-line pitch from Larson that Belisario took and essentially did his own thing with.
Hmm.
But he gets a credit on all 158 episodes. That's good money if you can get it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, fair play to the guy. I mean, he created Alias Smith and Jones, which is one of my favourite shows, at least for its first 33 episodes. And Auto Man, Manimal, as well as
he's raking. He was raking in the checks for that one.
Yeah, the
let's
Manimal.
Take good with the bad, you know. But I loved Auto Man and Manimal when I was 10.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I remember watching those as a kid and just going, wow, this is amazing. And then going back, you know, when they re-aired them on like the Sci-Fi Channel and going, oh, well, I had some poor taste when I was a child. So, but yeah, it's a tangential relationship to it. The fact that Ronald D. Moore updated the Battlestar Galactica and Ronald D. Moore is a related Deep Space Nine. But, you know, that's the only thing sort of Star Trek-y that I can think of.
And to finish off the earlier point, the Star Trek, the complete original series on Amazon on Blu-ray right now goes for $78.38.
Wow.
So that is a good price. And if you do it, go through to True Freaks and click on the Amazon link.
Follow that link.
Definitely.
Have we done our contractually obligated pimping now?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just the individual, like season one, is $34.02, coming marked down from $129.99.
Wow.
See, that's the one that's only 15 quid on .co.uk, just to complete season one. I didn't look at the other ones.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's a pretty decent price, especially for the complete series. You said it was like 80?
Then I wondered for myself, yeah, it's $78.38. Or if you want to buy it used, you can get it for $77.99. Save yourself 39 cents.
That's awesome.
Wow. Well, that's the option I'd go for.
Anything to save 39 cents.
But yeah.
I sit here and I wonder, like, you know, it's the collector in me, because I sit here and I think, oh, you know, that's pretty affordable. I should get that. On the other hand, I have total access to it on Netflix. I have no intention of canceling Netflix. It's like silly for me to run out and buy it. And yet, like, it's still tempting to me. By the time I no longer have Netflix, I don't even know if Blu-ray will be the operating form of choice any longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I've held off buying Blu-rays. I've got a couple, mostly the Marvel movies, because they did do them as triple play initially. So you got the DVD and the Blu-ray. They've stopped doing that now. And basically, that just means I don't buy Blu-rays. So, fair play, well done. Well done, marketing people. You've killed the sale off. Congratulations.
But Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Are we putting off talking about this episode, do you think?
Maybe.
Well, why don't we just jump into it then?
Of all the forces in the universe, death has remained a mystery. But now, a psychopathic genius...
He is dead.
He's alive.
That's impossible.
...has discovered the secret to immortality.
The body dies, the consciousness lives on.
In another brain.
And someone will inherit his murderous legacy.
I'm watching you.
And I'm watching you.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
All right.
Today's episode is The Passenger, Season 1, Episode 9, directed by Paul Lynch, story by Morgan Gendel, and its original air date is February 22nd, 1993. En route back to the station in a runabout, Kira and Bashir respond to a distress call from a Kobliad freighter and find Ty Kajada, a security guard, and her prisoner, Rao Vantika. Kajada tells them Vantika started a fire on the ship in an effort to escape. Vantika dies, and Bashir and Kira take Kajada back to Deep Space Nine, where she becomes convinced that he is still alive. He has faked his death many times before, and Kajada has spent most of her adult life tracking him. Bashir and Dax come to believe that Vantika's consciousness may be hiding in Kajada's brain without her knowledge. Vantika has indeed taken on another body, and he contacts Quark to obtain mercenaries to hijack an upcoming shipment of Deridium, a compound Kobliads desperately need to survive. Later, when Quark meets the mercenaries, they are interrupted as Kajada falls from the second floor of Quark's bar while eavesdropping on them. In the infirmary, Kajada reveals that the real Vantika pushed her. Dax finds a device under Vantika's fingernails that he used to transfer his unconsciousness to someone else. Surprisingly, he didn't say, "Remember." And tests Kajada for signs of the device's usage. Meanwhile, Quark and the mercenaries meet with the real Vantika in the body of Bashir. One step ahead of the crew's investigations, Vantika and the mercenaries manage to gain control of the freighter, carrying the Deridium. The station traps the freighter in a tractor beam, but Vantika threatens to destroy the freighter, along with Bashir's body. One of the mercenaries objects to such a plan, prompting Vantika to shoot him. Dax is able to disrupt Vantika's control of Bashir's body long enough for a confused Bashir to lower the freighter's shields and allow himself to be transported to the infirmary. Once Vantika's consciousness is removed from Bashir's brain, Kajada destroys Vantika's stored consciousness and rids herself of him once and for all. The end.
God, where to begin, eh? First of all, I do want to say I have dug out my issue of Ciné Fantastique, which is cover dated October 1993, and I'd forgot I had these. If you remember Ciné Fantastique, it was a magnificent magazine, and they did a special issue every year for the run of The Next Generation, covering each season. Mark A. Altman normally wrote them, and they are really, really good in-depth interviews with the cast. Because Ciné Fantastique was independent, he can get quite critical, and he does. And if you want to try and find this on eBay, again, it's the October 1993 edition, I recommend it. These Ciné Fantastique books, magazines, are brilliant. Much better than the Captain's Log books that Altman published, that essentially just copied and pasted the material, but they couldn't include any colour photos or official photos. So these are actually the better ones to get a hold of. I've dug that out for the review of this episode. Altman covers the entire first season, so I think this is just as good as a companion to the Deep Space Nine companion, which is critical, as we've said before, but this is talking about the show as it was in production. So it's well worth getting a hold of. The thing about this actual episode, we were talking about this before we started, this is the first one I've had to watch twice, because I watched it and then I'd completely forgotten what it was about 5 minutes after finishing. So I watched it again, and 5 minutes after it finishing, I had completely forgotten what it's about. And that pretty much sums up what I think of it. Apart from the ending, which is god-awful for Star Trek, and a couple of truly terrible acting performances, particularly Alexander Siddig, or Siddig Elfadil, whatever name he is at this point in the show's history. This is distinctly unmemorable.
I wouldn't argue with that at all. I think it is it's unmemorable. To me, it was not engaging. First of all, the whole mystery of Vantika. Well, let's see who was in contact with him just before he died. Then he tried to make it this big mystery. I don't know. It was like, duh. And I was, I can't. I hate to agree too much, and I'm thinking Sean may give us the counterpoint on some of this stuff. But I also thought that Siddig's performance was just a little too over the top, and the problem with it is I was almost cheering the fact, okay, he's going to have a chance to do some real acting now instead of just playing the spoiled brat. And he turned himself into like a mustache twirling guy when he was finally revealed as having the consciousness in him. And then it just had so little going for it as far as I was concerned. There wasn't a mystery. There was really no character development at all. I didn't like the fact that Quark complied with Vantika's desire to get these mercenaries, and it was not so much a money-related thing as a fear-related thing, and I think Quark is better than that. I don't know if that's a fair criticism, but that's kind of what I thought as it went on. Like, I didn't think he would comply so easily with something that he that he ultimately thinks could come back and bite him in the ass or bite the station in the ass. And there wasn't like the huge profit margin that was blinding him to it or anything. It was fear. So that bothered me. I was not a fan of this episode.
Okay, well, yes, I'm probably going to be the one who's going to be the counterpoint to it. I will agree with you that, again, Julian Bashir or Siddiq El-Fadil, Alexander Siddiq, whatever he's calling himself this time, was perhaps one of the weakest parts of this. His introductory part of the show is just annoying. Him on the runabout was awful. The end where he turns into a, like you said, a mustache-twirling victim or villain is just unconscionable. I was so glad when he got zapped and turned into a giant goon. He was just awful in this. However, I really did like the sort of mystery aspect of the show. Once you realize that it's Bashir, it's pretty apparent. Oh, he was the only one that Vantika was in contact with prior to his death. So, yes, obviously Bashir is the one. But they held that sort of MacGuffin of having Kajada being the character who could have been it, because she was the one who had the most contact with him and the most interaction with him. So I thought there was actually sort of a reasoning behind her possibly being the person who has the memory engrams and put into her brain. So I found this to be a sort of interesting murder mystery. Yes, again, Quark doing this with, I can abide by Quark being underhanded. I can't abide by him being willing to do things for not for profit specifically. Overall, I really enjoyed it with the exception of the character of Bashir. He's getting on my nerves. I want to see him be enjoyable, and so far he hasn't been. But let's go. Why don't we go into anything else that we want to talk about in the show?
Caitlin Brown was in it. She was Natoth in Babylon 5. And there's a lovely picture of her in this Cine Fantastique, reading an issue of Cine Fantastique with Babylon 5 on the cover.
Nice.
So that was quite interesting. On the Deep Space Nine set. So that's quite interesting. I thought she was quite bad in this one. I liked her as Natoth, but I thought she was rather bland in this. And there's a bit in the middle of it. You two may be able to explain this to me, because I rewound this. She spots Quark and the bad guys doing the dirty deeds done dirt cheap. And then all of a sudden, she's dangling off a balcony and falls. Why did she climb over the balcony? When did she climb over the balcony? Because you don't see her do it. What was the point of that bit? I didn't get that at all. It just makes her seem very stupid.
It reminded me of Michael Keaton falling off the balcony in Night Shift, which cracks me up when I see it.
I kind of thought it was maybe her playing into the fact that she was trying to dissuade people from thinking that she might be taken over by Vantika. Basically, she's saying, oh, Vantika pushed me, and this is her excuse to let people think that she doesn't have Vantika in her brain. So that's kind of how I took it. It was a sort of deflection, because at the time, I think Sisko and Dax were kind of, or at least Sisko and Bashir were kind of thinking that this brain engram, this little thing going on, Kajita has had the most association with this character. If he's trying to transfer his memory, she'd be the most person susceptible to it. And by her throwing herself off this railing, it was a way to sort of deflect that. So it fell more into the idea that she was trying to let people not think that she had this brain engram and put into her. That was my thought on it.
Okay, all right. I still think it was stupid, but okay.
Yeah, well, no, you know, when you realize that it wasn't her, yeah, it does seem kind of stupid. But yeah, you know, if it were her, that's kind of you kind of have to realize, well, why would she throw herself off, you know, a third story balcony or a third story railing? That's just silly.
Yes, that was my reaction to it. It was just silly.
Yeah, I thought that was a little over the top, honestly, and that's why it reminded me of the night shift scene. But just changing gears a little bit, the one attempt in the episode I thought to have a character moment, and I thought it came off as too rote, too by the numbers, was the having the new security officer in there and having Odo be all upset. Oh, that's a new guy questioning my authority. I quit. And then, Cisco saying, oh, no, I don't accept your resignation. Again, just seemed too... If it had developed over time, I think I could have been okay with it. And I think it could have seemed organic. But it just seemed so quick and so forced that it just seemed like a by-the-numbers, almost sitcom-level resolution of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that had potential.
I'm wondering if this Primin character plays any more of a role than what we see here, and we're going to see him again in the next episode.
That is it for him. He never appears again after those two.
See, because I was wondering, he kind of reminded me of the character that we'll see in later episodes who was associated with the Maquis. I didn't know if he might have gone off to do anything with that, but... Yeah, his introduction into this story just really didn't play any effect other than to give more reason for Rene Arbogenois to have an argument with Cisco. I think Cisco in one of the early episodes basically defined that he trusted Odo, and he's putting Odo in charge of the station despite the fact that the station does have Federation operations on there. So I agree, it didn't really play into the story, but it didn't do anything negative. I didn't look on it as negatively as I think you may have.
I think it just wasn't very interesting. The story didn't grab me. I can only imagine that on another show, Patrick Stewart or Jonathan Frakes or even Marina Sirtis even, given this chance to overact wildly at the end of this, like Bashir is given, they would have loved it. They would have relished it, and it may have elevated the episode. Think of the end of the one with Loaxana Troyan, where Picard has to quote Shakespeare to get her back off the other ship. That's a mediocre episode, but that ending actually elevates it because Patrick Stewart's clearly having fun. But his performance is mannered and laboured, and the way he delivers his lines was apparently dubbed because the first time he did it, it was considered unsuitable. So God knows how bad it was originally. So ultimately, you're left with an episode that doesn't really do anything. Apart from the ending, what did you two think of the ending? Where Caitlin Brown's character just executes him?
I had a problem with that.
Yeah. Good, because to me, that ending goes against everything that fundamentally Star Trek represents. After that, it's not that she did it. I have no problem with her doing it. She's not Starfleet. She's not human. So she may not have the same value systems in place that we do. But the fact that Sisko and Co. all just looked at each other and went, oh, well, problem solved. He should have clapped her in irons and had Odo throw her in the brig.
Yeah, that was a thing that kind of disturbed me. At the ending, she phasers the little iPod that has his brain in it or whatever. And then, she just walks away and you get the shot of, I think, what it is, it's Dax and Bashir sort of looking at each other and just giving each other a wry grin. That did really feel out of place. They just witnessed someone
being
destroyed.
Murdered.
Yeah, essentially being murdered, their essence being destroyed. So you would think that in this enlightened Starfleet thing, they'd be like, what just happened? So that was a negative.
Because within the Star Trek universe as well, we've established that the mind can be independent. Spock's Katra. Mm-hmm. Was independent from his body. His body was considered dead, but he was resurrected from the Katra. So that petri dish was still alive. Mm-hmm. So she's just executed a life form in front of Starfleet command personnel. She should have been thrown in the brig.
Well, should have at least questioned it. She might have had the authority to do that. She might have been taking him to his execution. Although if she was doing that, why didn't she just do the execution herself when she had the opportunity, when he was, you know, when he still was in his body. So yeah, it just makes no sense at all. At least have the scene where they question her, or they just, you know, damn her for doing it.
Oh, one line of dialogue at the end. She's been extradited to a court hearing to justify what she just did. I could have lived with that.
Or even they have taken her and put her in prison. Look, she sacrificed her whole life for this. She dedicated her life to catching him, and now in death he's still haunting her. Something, you know. It would have made it a little bit at least explained. Plus, you know what? They removed his consciousness from Bashir using science. They could have eliminated all of the search for Spock. If they just had that iPod at the time.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, and this is another MacGuffin, the fact that she does this could also lead you to believe that, you know, if Vatnica transferred his essence into Bashir, couldn't he have before this transferred his essence into Kajita and essentially, you know, done it twice, and she still has his memory and grams in there. And that was him destroying that version of him and sort of wiping clean the slate and making people think that he's actually dead, when actually he's still running around in the brain of the person that's his mortal enemy. I mean, I'm not trying to put, you know, I'm not trying to make the show better, but, you know, that was something that I was also thinking about during the end of the show. That could have been another MacGuffin that they sort of played up, that he's still around, and the reasoning behind her phasering the little iPod with his brain on it was the fact that he was actually originally in her, and, you know, it was never said throughout the show. But maybe that's me giving the show writers too much credit.
Yeah, I agree with you, though. I just think that there wasn't this episode. I don't know if this is the case or not, but this episode struck me as possibly being another inventory story from TNG that they changed up for DS9. It just didn't feel like a DS9 episode to me.
I can't find it. It doesn't mention any of that in Cine Fantastique or The Companion, so it could have been. It's certainly the teleplays by Morgan Gendale, who worked on Next Generation, so it's possibly an idea he had for Next Gen, but then didn't pitch it and just sold it to Deep Space Nine instead. That's always possible. Well, I just thought it was, other than the ending, which I thought was appallingly bad Star Trek, I just thought it was a bit boring. I don't really have a lot to say about it, as evidenced by the fact I watched it twice and didn't remember it.
one of my criticisms of the episode, but also goes to one of the things that possibly I think the best line in the episode. I do not like at all Quark sitting there and macking on Dax. I don't see it. I don't think, you know, he comes from a culture where they don't respect women that much. He wouldn't be sitting there pining over her. But I do like when Odo says you're deluding yourself, and his response is, there's nothing wrong with a good delusion. I sell them upstairs to dozens of people every day. I think that was his best line in the whole show.
Yeah, I think some of that can come down to still trying to find out who Quark is. Because in this episode, like you say, he's not doing this for profit. It's purely an illegal venture. And I think the producers probably realized if they carried on doing this with him, he's not a likable rogue. Mm-hmm. Whereas he would become somebody who's obsessed with Latinum and making money, but he does eventually become somebody with a moral standard. It's a very low moral standard, but he has one. And whereas in this one, he's essentially just engaged in illegal activity that I didn't understand what was in it for him.
Yeah, I think we're going to see in upcoming episodes the Ferengi characters developed a lot more, just to where they're not actually villains, they're just motivated by profit. And I think once they get that definition of the characters down, we're going to see a lot more likability in the character of Quark.
Well, I think we've now hit the point, although I do think, like I said, that this might be some inventory story that they went with, but I think we've now hit the point where they've exhausted the scripts that were written before the parts were cast, because I think now they are trying to actually find their legs with the actual actors a little bit. I think we've taken O'Brien and put him to the background a little bit. In fact, I don't recall seeing him at all.
No, Cole Meany was off filming the sequel to
The Commitments.
Yeah,
he's off filming the sequel to The Commitment, so he's been gone for three episodes now. Three or four episodes. Apparently, he had it in his contract that he would when he was doing Deep Space Nine that he would be allowed so many episodes off to do films. So that's
we had Captive Pursuit, which obviously was a he was in Culess.
Yeah, he was in Culess, but then after that he was, you know, they said, oh, he and Keiko are off station visiting their parents or something. They gave some excuse at the beginning from the next one after that.
Yeah, here you go. Here's a quote in this Cine Fantastique. Iris Stephen Burr says, for the first third of the year, they were trying to create episodes for the series without seeing the pilot. So they were basically only going off the script for the pilot. So yeah, you're probably right. They just haven't found who everybody is at this point.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about next episode yet, other than to say next episode seems to be them saying, hey, this Quark character seems interesting. Maybe we could focus on him a little bit. So that's what gave me the feeling that this was the last one written without having any, you know, the benefit of having ever seen an episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do we have anything else that we want to say about this? Do we want to give our scores for the show?
Just another good Quark moment. Mm-hmm. Just because there was a couple of, you know, I gave you my negatives, but a couple of positives. I like the fact that after they close down the bar, he cleans it, but not because he gives a shit about it being clean, but because he's looking to see if anybody dropped any change.
Well, again, I think they're finally getting into the fact that the Ferengi mindset is more about what can I earn, what can I find, and if it's, you know, picking up coins that have fallen on the floor, then that's what they're gonna do.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's finally giving him a little bit more depth and making him, for better or for worse, at least trying to make him interesting, and eventually they find it, and I don't think that's too far off. You know, there's still a little hit and miss going on, but I think they do find their legs with him.
Okay.
So, are we rating this one?
Yep, I'm ready. Go ahead.
All right. I guess I go first on this one. I found it to be boring. I thought the acting... I wouldn't go as far as Andy, who said it's appalling. I would say it was pedestrian. I thought some of the characterization was off. I thought some of the science was silly, like it was an attempt to make science fiction without actually thinking about it. I'm gonna go 1.5 on this one. It's not the worst ever. It isn't as bad as I thought Culess was, but it's not good.
Nope. I think the ending's appalling. I don't think the entire, and I think some of the performances are appalling. The episode itself, while you're watching it, it's, you know, it's all right. It's there. It's doing what it does. If you're not really paying attention to it, it's a good way to while away 45 minutes and then go and do something else with your life. I don't want to give it one because there's always the possibility you'll give something the lowest score you can and then later on in the series you'll get to an episode that makes you long for the passenger. So I'm going to go with Paul and give it 1.5.
Okay, well, I obviously have a very different opinion. I liked the sort of mystery aspect of it. Maybe it's just because I've been listening to Hope Mullinax a lot and hearing her theories on stuff and giving fan theories to this, that I thought the idea of the person who's pursuing this villain possibly being one of the people who could have been the person that he put the brain engram into was interesting. I will agree, Bashir can go die in a fire. I've never been so happy to see him get phasered or tractor beam zapped or whatever the heck he was at the end of the show. I mean, he's really getting on my nerves. But overall, I really enjoyed this. In fact, this was one of the more enjoyable episodes that I've seen over the past couple of times. So I'm actually going to give it a 3.5.
Woo!
Yeah, I know. I really enjoyed this.
Really?
Also. Yes. And I won't have to, you know, like I said, I thought it was an interesting mystery, but we're gonna have disagreements, so I'm
fine with your rating. Yep. I'm a little surprised. I thought you were gonna go 3. So when you said 3.5, I was surprised.
You know, so far this has been, aside from Emissary and Past Prologue, I'm looking at my spreadsheet right now. This is the one that I've really enjoyed, probably the most on this. But yeah, again, we can all agree to disagree and keep our hatred to the forums and to, you know, the outtakes of the show.
No, you are entitled to your opinion, and that's why we do the show.
Awesome.
And I can't sit here and complain that we agree too much and then get annoyed when we disagree. I'm happy to have differing opinions. And I don't get annoyed when we agree too much. I just feel like it becomes a little, you know, maybe a little boring.
Makes the episode a bit bland, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, I agree. If we were all just, oh yeah, this was great, or oh, this was crap, it doesn't make for an interesting conversation. So yeah, I'm glad that every once in a while we have our disagreements.
Absolutely.
Do you guys want to do a couple of emails? We've got a few here.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Incoming transmission.
Okay, I will go ahead to save Paul's eyesight. I will read the first one. This one comes from Gene Hendricks, and it's about Listen to the Prophets, episode number 5. Gene writes in, Paul, Sean, and Andy. So Paul gets the billing. There you go. He says that this was a very...
But before you carry on.
Yes.
I get and, which apparently, in actor parlance, is very, very good in terms of salary.
Okay, you get an ampersand.
Is it, and it's almost like it's almost repetitive, though. And, Andy.
Oh, well, I didn't write it, dude, but I'm happy to take that and if it means a bump in salary. That's all I'm saying.
Well, it's not necessarily an and. It's the ampersand sign, so you have to say ampersand, Andy.
Ah, but in Writer's Guide, that means, Sean, you and I worked together. That's what the ampersand means. Well, if it's and, A-N-D, it means you worked separately.
Oh.
Okay. But I think you could feel free to double.
I'm a font of trivial knowledge today, aren't I?
This isn't going to mean you're going to get paid anymore. Well, you know, I don't know.
It doesn't mean I get paid, but...
DiMonzo could triple your salary and it would still be zero, so there you go.
But I get the and. And Anthony Stewart Head as Giles.
It's
and Larry Minetti as Rick. And Andy. I like that. Oh, that's good.
So, well, take your victories where you can. Gene says this was a very good O'Brien episode, but it does seem a bit too forced in that direction. I agree with Paul that Sisko should have been at least opened the door for him to take matters into his own hands. But Sisko's dressing down of O'Brien at the end works for that after the fact. The makeup and performances for the aliens in this episode were quite good, although Toss costume reminds me a little bit but too much of Bossk. And I don't think we mentioned that during the show. Yeah, Tosk, ironically, does look a bit like the character of Bossk from Empire Strikes Back, except his face doesn't have the sort of snout. I remember Bossk having more of a snout, while Tosk's face was just actually sort of flat to his own face. So
He would have been at home stood on the Imperial Star Destroyer bridge, wouldn't he?
Oh, definitely.
No disintegration.
He continues saying, the Dabu girl scene did seem a bit strange, but I look to it as serving to the show that Sisko is acting more like a territorial governor for the station than just being the leader of the Starfleet contingent. He could have just easily been talking about price gouging with fresh fruit. And as you know, if you're talking about gouging with fresh fruit, you need to arm yourself with a pointed stick. No one will get that. Well, unless you watch Monty Python. Anyway, he says... Go ahead, Paul.
Well, isn't pointed stick instead of fresh fruit?
Yes. Well, you know, you want to protect yourself from a pointed stick rather than a banana. Yes. He finishes up saying it was a very entertaining episode, as always, Gene. And of course, Gene does the Hammer Strikes podcast, the Quantum Cast, Anime Freaks, and he's also does Legends of the Superheroes. All of them can be found over at 2 Drew Freaks. Check those out.
Yeah, I agree with what Gene says about the fact that Sisko has to mediate these little disputes. Anybody who works in a fairly big location knows there's little petty, silly disputes between people that the management have to deal with. And if you're not management and you get to just kind of see it from afar, you scratch your head and think, thank God I don't have to do that. It wasn't the fact that Sisko had to sit and mediate over it. It was... actually, the nature of the dispute itself that I thought was bothersome. But, you know, to each their own. It's just, again, I think they're finding their legs. Next one. Do you want to do it, Andy, or you want me to do it?
No, I'll do Timothy Elliott. All right. We've given away who it is, haven't we? Hello, Timothy. I need to talk about Listen to the Prophets episode 1, which kind of implies we remember what we did in episode 1, but okay.
Oh, God.
Greetings, fellow Federation citizens. I want to congratulate Jarl on a brilliant first episode of your DS9 podcast. It pleases me that this corner of the Alpha Quadrant is in good hands now that Star Trek Monthly Monday, the original series episodes, are dwindling. I, like Andy, count DS9 as my favourite Trek after the original series. I like Next Gen, but I'd never... But I never rewatch episodes with the same glee as DS9. I remember out a year before the show aired, I attended a Star Trek panel at a con here in Dallas. The panel was giving sneak peeks into the goings-on in the Trek universe, and one announcement was about a new show called Deep Space Nine. They gave a brief explanation of the premise and mentioned some of the characters. One of the primary characters was to come from a planet with lighter gravity than Earth. They would need the use of an exoskeleton to move about. This character never made it into the final show, but a similar character did appear in the early seasons. In response to the point Paul made about Kira Nerys being fleshed out more as a character, I've always felt that the character of Tasha Yar would have undergone the same transformation had Denise Crosby not left. Whilst Next Gen never really succeeded in bringing its secondary characters into the light, Barclay and O'Brien being the exceptions, DS9's secondary characters were so wonderfully written and used and fully realised. This larger cast of characters gave Deep Space Nine a density and richness the Next Generation never achieved. Keeping this short, great podcast for a great show. Cheers, Tim from Texas. P.S. Considering the melting pot that is Deep Space Nine, of the three of you, who is Federation, who is Ferengi, and who is Bajoran? That's a good question. First of all, thank you very much. I don't know that Tasha would have become as fully developed as Kira. I don't really think that was the Next Generation's bag. Jonathan Frakes has actually slagged off the Next Generation's character development as much as he loved doing the show. I think Deep Space Nine was just a richer show in terms of character, so I don't necessarily agree Tasha would have become as well fleshed out as Kira, but she probably would have become more interesting. Ironically, we learn more about Tasha after she dies in that episode with her sister in, where we learn about how she grew up.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she also...
Or the time travel episode with the alternate universe when...
Yesterday's Enterprise.
Yeah, where she comes back as the... Well, isn't that the one where she comes back as the Romulan character and they kind of tie
That's
Redemption.
Almost, oh, okay.
Yeah. This is the one where time has changed and the only one who realizes it is Guinan. She's still on the bridge of the Enterprise, and that's one of the things that clues Guinan into the fact that something's wrong.
Hmm. Okay, it's been so long since I've watched Next Gen episodes. Yeah.
All right. Who's Federation? Oh, sorry. Go on, Sean.
I was going to say I think we mentioned the character who was supposed to be from the lighter gravity. We had an email about that, I think, last time that we talked about that. So, yeah, that's good. I didn't specifically know that one of the characters was supposed to be that from the original, or from the original origin of the show. So that's interesting.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, since Andy was just talking about raising his salary because there's an ampersand next to his name, I'm putting him as the Ferengi.
I live with that.
I think Sean is more pure and based on this stuff, so I'm giving him Bajoran, and I'm just straight-laced and annoying, so I'm Federation.
There you go. I'm fine with that. Gotta get my nose ridges polished. Well, cool. Do we want to save the other emails for the next show? We've got a couple more. We can do that. I think there's a couple that are from the same guy.
There's two in a row from the same guy, so we'll do it in the next episode.
We can merge into one email, yeah.
Okay, that sounds good.
And then do the other one from Timothy.
All right, well...
And just as an aside, Andy, when you say y'all, you sound like you just walked right out of a Texas bar.
Y'all. Misspent youth watching the Dukes of Hazzard. Did you have a Daisy Duke?
Just wrote it all down. Truncate that.
Truncate. Well, okay. Well, so we've got our episode. We've got our ratings. Oh yes, actually, I was keeping track of this. This one was a difficult one. I looked in that if you check the show on Netflix, around 8 minutes and 16 seconds into the show, Morn is in the episode, but he doesn't have really any role. I think you don't even see his face. You see him from behind, and so basically, you know, blink and you'll miss it, little cameo. So Morn is in the episode, but it's almost so insignificant that if you weren't looking for him, like obsessive compulsive me, you wouldn't see him. So there you go. So so far Morn has been the glue holding Deep Space Nine together.
You know, I think we'll find that continues.
You know, it's going to be disappointing if we ever find an episode where Morn isn't in it. I mean, it'll just basically destroy the show for me. I don't know what I'll be able to do. Okay, well, do we want to do a next time here, Andy?
Okay. Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Move along home.
visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Recorded on Friday night. The session was 2 hours and 5 minutes of actual recording. Now, I think after being edited, because there is some downtime in that, it's going to end up being about 120.
That's a good show.
But I just took the 2-hour and 5-minute piece, and the first thing I did was I hit truncate silence, and it cut it down to 1 hour and 50 minutes. So it cut 15 minutes of dead air off of it.
Yeah.
Jeez, I'm flat out at the minute. I almost had a breakdown on Tuesday. I hate you.
I'm sorry. This make recording today awkward. The only negative thing I will say about Netflix is that they don't offer the special features. So it is, if you are one of those people who like seeing the behind the scenes stuff or the making of, the outtakes or stuff like that, those are only available on the DVDs or Blu-rays. So, and plus also with the Marvel movies, the little additional films they have, like the Hail to the King thing with the Mandarin.
I've heard they're not doing that any longer because if they want to tie something together, they're going to do it on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. They're not going to make a special film.
Yeah, the prologue to the new season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had a Carter teaser that is essentially one of the mini movies that they used to do on the Blu-ray. So I can kind of understand that. And, you know, anytime you want to bring Hayley Atwell back, thumbs up from me.
Well, and Dio, not to get off on even more of a tangent, but I believe that an Agent Carter show is already in the
works. Oh, yeah! An 8-part miniseries.
Starts in January.
Nice.
You get it.
I think we're getting 6 episodes?
I thought it was 8.
6 or 8? Either way.
Either way.
Now, I wonder if it's going to have, I don't know the name of the actor, the guy who played Howard Stark in the...
Yep, he's going to be in it. And nice. Apparently the Howling Commandos are going to be in it, and she's going to make another appearance on S.H.I.E.L.D. before the series starts, so I'm looking forward to that. I actually find her more interesting than I find most of the S.H.I.E.L.D. cast.
Yeah, we don't want to get too far in that, because that's Paul's other show that he's helping out with. But yeah,
let's just say I do like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think that my liking of Hayley Atwell may be coloring that perception.
Yeah, my thoughts on it is it's gotten significantly better. The first season I had some problems with it, but I'm liking the direction that they're going. It's sort of just like it's a Mission Impossible with the Marvel Universe, and I like that.
Yeah, and then just we're going to keep tangenting off here, so you may have to edit some stuff out. I don't know. We'll throw this at the end maybe, but I just recently, last week, I saw, not on Netflix, it was just on demand on one of the movie channels. I had never even heard of it before, but I saw a movie starring the actor who plays Howard Stark, and in it, the antagonist for him is Samuel Jackson, and it's called Reasonable Doubt. It may have been one of the worst movies I ever saw. It was terrible.
Yeah, Sam Jackson has that propensity of doing films just because he's not quite to the level of Nicolas Cage where he'll just do films for the money. But yeah, he's done some films that aren't, you know, the highest level of quality. So yeah.
I'll be honest, I never get that criticism.
What's that?
I never get that criticism. They did it just for the money. Why do we go to work every day? I know I only go for the money.
The theory is once you've hit a certain level, you can afford to be choosy and pick the movies that are going to be quality. And in doing so, you enhance your own reputation and ultimately make more money because of it anyway. That's the theory on that.
I don't believe that.
I think they should do whatever makes them happy. I don't criticize them for doing so. He may have done that because maybe the director was a friend of his and he wanted to do the guy a favor or something like that.
Michael Caine is my favorite example of this. He's constantly asked, why did you do Jaws 4? And he said, I looked at the script and the first line in the script said exterior Bermuda. And I said, right, I'll do that.
Michael Caine and Robert Duvall when they were working, Gene Hackman and Sean Connery, those four actors, I've seen them in great movies and I've seen them in shit movies, but I've never seen any one of them give a performance that I thought that was a bad performance.
No, Michael Caine's unapologetic about it, and Piranha, all of them, he says, he considers himself a working class man because of his background. He may have achieved a level now where he's a multimillionaire, but in his head, he still considers himself working class. So if somebody offers you work, you take it.
And I think that's more of a British thing. I think that a lot of British actors have that sort of mentality. It's more an American thing where like, oh, I need to do this because it enhances my repertoire. It shows me in a better light, or it gives me the opportunity to show my acting talents. It's not really like, well, this is a good role. I need to make a house payment. So.